only had two shots on goal in the first half. Both of them found the back of the net. Just mistakes. Don't need to worry about bouncing back. There's not worried about that at all. The guys are playing fine. We know the reason why. We're going through this period right now of not picking up as many points, and it's injuries. Chiro wasn't fit to play tonight, and then on the bench, it's having three players on the bench. It's all those things, and you look at the bench, and Nick comes off after 20 minutes with a laceration on his knee, and you lose another player, and it's like, there's only so much you can do, there's only so much the guys can do on the field.
Like, I'm feeling a little irked, or at least, like, irked adjacent, and then these guys bring in their bad vibes? Bro, I'm straight up not having a good time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Loco, the Seriously Crazy Fan Podcast for El Paso Locomotive FC, brought to you by Golden Goal Press and Roughneck Scarves, a proud member of the Beautiful Game Network. I am your host, Phil Bakke. We got kind of it's a little bit of a different vibe around Seriously Loco today. It's I don't know if I enjoy it, but I'll definitely enjoy the next hour plus of just venting our frustrations. We've got a trio today. Mika Burrell has joined us back from overseas. Mika, welcome back.
Yay, glad to be back. Wish we were talking about a win, but I'll fight through the jet lag to complain on the pod tonight. So, but no, good to be back.
And once again, Christian Canales is back. Christian, I was getting asked last week about what your hashtag is. Did we ever land on one for you?
Apparently it was hashtag Chris Cartel. That was the only one that was submitted. So I guess I'll have to take
that
it.
That one's like devious.
The Chris Cartel is, I think, by its very nature, a little devious, just because Chris is always providing that real solid analysis, and then just one time randomly in the pod he'll come through with some super spicy like takedown or something,
yeah,
like
no,
of somebody.
True.
Just one time he does his business, you know, subtly, just waits for his opportunity to strike. I don't know, Chris Cobra.
There you go. The brown mamba.
So we got it's a weird one, but we got a lot to discuss. Locomotive falling 3-1 to San Antonio FC at home in Copa Tejas action. I didn't have the heart to look at the Copa Tejas standings. I know we're still winless, and I'm assuming due to that, probably bottom,
yes,
of the Copa Tejas. Right now, Locomotive going through a bit of a rough patch. I mean, guys, like, Is this just brought on by injuries? Like, I mean, everyone out there is kind of, it seems, even at the team, is kind of just wringing their hands, kind of staring at the wall and just looking for the solutions. I mean, are the solutions right here with the team, or are we looking at just a tough stretch right now?
I mean, there's no denying that the injury woes continue. I mean, it seems like every time we step on the pitch, someone gets injured, or you hear about someone being injured in training, which I think that's been going on a little bit in the past couple weeks. So, yeah, I mean, that we can't do this pod tonight without talking about that, because you saw, last night, or, you know, when you're listening to this, there were five players on the bench, including Jermaine Forda, the reserve keeper. So really four outfield players. And that's just absolutely not something that I think Mark would ever want to happen or imagine could happen. So yeah, that's definitely a challenge. Missing all those players.
And I think that if we have to give another reason beside injury, I don't think that, ever since, you know, when we don't have Meshack, or I guess this is kind of piggybacking on injury, but no Meshack, no Chiro, I don't feel like the team has a leader on the field. Some people might, you know, point to Richie, but also when you do that, it's like, poor guy. Like, I think he's given, you know, as much as he can up to this point. And so it's time for, you know, some of the younger players, or kind of the middle of the road as in terms of, you know, age and experienced players, to really step up. Because, you know, we're without the, you know, the sage wisdom of our older guys. And so to ask Richie to, you know, to keep being the, you know, the mental backbone of this team is a big ask. And so it's time for someone else to take the reins, I think.
Yeah, it's it is an interesting, there was a comment in Mark's presser last night. It's hard to imagine that that was last night. It feels like a long time ago for right. some reason. But in his presser, he said, we need more men out there. And I think some of that is showing through in some of these experienced guys like Yuma, Chiro, and Meshack just not being available. It's some of the decision making is just not there in this run, and we're not having like the cooler heads that prevail when you need them through this what is already going to be a tough period of the season, let alone when you have like these kind of injury problems.
Yeah, when we're kind of over the hill right now in terms of where we are in the season, and so this is really where, like, it's like what Mark's been saying since the beginning. You know, since the conference has been so competitive, you can come out strong, but if you have, you know, a bad streak like we're having, we're sinking. You know, five mm-hmm. weeks ago or however many weeks ago, you know, we were at the top of the table.
Yeah.
And so now I don't know exactly where we sit right now. Before the result yesterday, we were in fifth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a loss on Saturday, you know, puts us, I don't know where. It might put us, you know, at 10th.
I think a draw might even be enough to...
Yeah.
To fall down a place because of goal difference. So, yeah, it's not an ideal situation at all. I mean, we're kind of in free fall right now.
Yeah. This one starting, I got handed the lineup card, and I know I kind of had a sharp intake of breath as I frantically searched for Jerome Kiesewetter's name on the team sheet. And it wasn't forthcoming. Jerome... Chiro, Yuma, all still sidelined with injury, adding to what is already a fairly long list. So when you have a blow, though, like that of Jerome, who was seemingly healthy, we went into, you know, one of our longer layoffs in between games. When you have a double-digit goal scorer go, you know, down to a training injury that is not visible. It wasn't like, you know, some of these injuries this season that we've had, you know, occur during games where you have the evidence to show, and it's not surprising when he's not there the next week. When you have a blow like that right before the game, I mean, does something like that do damage just mentally to kind of the whole organization, like the fan base and kind of everyone around the team, when you're missing a guy who's been that important to the team?
Yeah, I think every game you go in and, you know, you expect him to score. And it's when we go over at the end of the episode and say, you know, what's your prediction? It's rare when someone doesn't say, you know, one for Jerome. So like you said, when you take that out and you're looking at this score sheet and you're saying, you know, what's the result going to be? The gears are running, and you know it's hard to logically come up and say, oh, you know, we're gonna get, you know, it's gonna be 1-0 and this person's gonna score, just because it, unfortunately, it's not happening for us,
right?
So it really makes you anything but optimistic.
Did you lose confidence at all before the match in terms of Mika, like in terms of getting a result? Did you, with that lineup put out, did you still think that with who we had out there, did you think that we were capable of getting a win against San Antonio?
I thought we were capable of getting a win just because we're playing at home, and I think that the players really do get something from the fans and from Eighth Notch, and of course, you know, as we've has been the discussion on social media in previous weeks, our pitch is conducive to the way we play. That hasn't been the case on some of these road trips, particularly mm-hmm. against San Antonio, in San Antonio.
Yeah.
So I never discount the team just per se. But yeah, not seeing Jerome in the lineup was extremely problematic for me, because I'm comfortable saying that there's not a player in this lineup with that killer instinct for goal. I think a lot of the, all of the goals that don't come from him are, you know, usually opportunistic, well-worked goals. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing.
Right.
I'm just saying that he has that quality, that, that next level of quality that I don't think anybody else in this team has.
Yeah, to make something out of nothing.
Exactly. And to, yeah, and to, you know, even when he's not scoring, to make these runs that, that you see players in higher tiers make, and, right, you know, the movement and all of that. So, and I'm sure for the opposition to not see him on the score sheet, that's a, or on the team sheet, is, you know, encouraging for them. So, so yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, there's exactly like Christian was saying, there's got to be a leader in this team who needs to emerge and kind of, you know, get us through the this tough moment, because we've got so many key players out, and someone needs to kind of, you know, someone or two or three players, something needs to change. I mean, it's just, sounds simple, but
one of the names that we, I think a lot of us anticipated seeing on the on that in that starting lineup, given how Mark has managed the personnel this season, is our newest signing, Sebastian Velasquez. I think everybody assumed that he would probably at least be on the bench, if not starting for this one. The first controversy of the night actually being that Seb was still awaiting some paperwork in his international transfer clearance, but San Antonio essentially had the option of, because he's registered with the league and the federation, and it was just, you know, clerical stuff that was being, I guess it was its proximity of its approval to the match was close enough to where San Antonio actually gets a say in whether he's eligible for that match or not. And San Antonio, allegedly, reportedly, according to sources, denied his eligibility for the match. So, I mean, for you guys, do you think that that is just, I don't know, is it a case of, you know, it's unsportsman in terms of not allowing a player to play, or is it just, this is business, we're trying to get a win, and he decreases our odds of winning this game?
I don't understand it, because someone brought this up on some sort of social media. I don't remember if it was Twitter or Facebook, but I don't see the difference from, you know, when these MLS2 squads, you know, drop their loan bombs. I don't understand how it's different. You basically have the same amount of time to, you know, game plan for this player, except they probably had more time because they knew he was on the team. You know, they knew that this player was on our roster.
Right.
So I don't get it. And it's hard. I want to come across as sincere as I am, because I understand that, you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, if the tables were turned. And I honestly don't think that that's the case. I think that as a competitor, as a group of competitors, you should want to play against the best competition. And it's not like it would, it's the, like you said, that it was a clerical thing, you know, a paperwork thing is what bugs me about it. It's not like he was suspended, you know, for some sort of, you know, malignant behavior or something. Right. And, you know, they're saying, well, maybe he should come back. Just it's not that. It's just a matter of, you know, paperwork going through at a certain time, which is, it's certainly out of his control, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I imagine that the team did everything that they could, you know, appropriately. It's just a matter of things, you know, in a bureaucratic system,
yeah,
things go slow. And so, I don't know. It just seems frustrating. I don't think it was the right thing to do.
But apparently it's completely legal.
Yeah.
You know, per league rules. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think it's unfortunate that that's something that is a thing in this, yeah, league. I mean, it just seems really farcical when you think about how exactly like you said, like how these MLS squads can just, you know, send down MLS level players, right, on a day's notice to play in the USL Championship. So why is that different for an international transfer? That yeah. I mean, I would really love to know the policy behind that USL. I mean, it's just that just is nonsense.
Yeah.
Well,
and I so, mean, it was kind of juxtaposed with a transfer that occurred for San Antonio within the Federation, so it doesn't require international clearance. But they signed Frank Lopez from LA Galaxy to their top scorer, actually, who had 5 goals already for Los Dos. He immediately joined San Antonio. His availability obviously affects the game. I would say
infects the game. As infects. Well.
From our perspective, it certainly infected the game. But you can almost juxtapose, you know, the absence of Jerome and Sebastian with the presence of Frank Lopez, and there you have kind of how the game actually transpired. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
as strange as that is. So, I mean, gosh, we got so much to talk about. It was funny posting on Twitter today. I said, I don't know how we're going to, like, clearly sarcastic. I don't know how we're going to come up with enough to talk about today. And Daniel thought I was being serious. He's like, we should double these episodes up, you know? No, we got plenty. Love you, Daniel. Can't wait till you're back on the pod, genuinely. Oh, and congrats. This is me getting off topic again, but just really quick, congrats to Southwest FC for winning the Southwest Conference of the UPSL, and they're going to the national quarterfinals against Oklahoma City FC. So yeah, they're gonna play that with a chance to go into the national tournament, in which is actually taking place in the Dallas area. So not too far to travel for the guys, and it's actually next Saturday they'll play Oklahoma City here in El Paso. So pretty cool opportunity for those guys in a national league. But the game kicks off. Christian, this like is exactly how we started the last one, basically. But we play completely dominant for 8 minutes and then concede the first big chance and a goal as a result. I mean, watching those opening few minutes, I know our chat, we were talking that, you know, San Antonio is playing with fire here. Like, we're carving them apart, creating chances. Guys are getting into good positions, and yet there we are, 1-0 down at the end of it all. And it's a feeling that's getting just far too familiar.
Yeah, I remember saying in our chat, like, they were pressing midfield in a way that made no sense, where it was leaving holes all over the place for Richie Ryan to just pass straight through them. Right. And we had an amazing start for the first, whatever, eight, nine minutes. And then, yeah, they end up scoring on a rebound. I think Ketterer, he makes the first save down low, and then he kind of, I don't know if it's cruel to say, kind of bobbled it.
Yeah.
But I mean, then it's right into the path of Frank Lopez, who's making that driving run into the box, and he finishes it, you know, bottom left, and it's just like a gut punch because of the way that we started. I don't know. I don't know if that's mental or just you just switch off, and a team like San Antonio can just punish you like that, which they did. It's beyond me how that happened, considering the way that we started.
Yeah, it's every week. Yeah. I don't know what to say anymore. It's just, I guess the solution is, you know, we have to score in the first 10 minutes of every game or else, you know, bad news.
Well, I mean, do you think there is something to the idea that when we do have those dominant spells, we play a lot of really good football, it looks great, but we're not putting really we're not putting the defense in a position where it actually feels under pressure, because we're really not generating the shots, whereas every time, you know, because we play with the ball and teams are playing on the counter, the chances they end up creating are so high quality. And it just feels like we're, you know, smashing our heads against the wall, trying to break somebody down slow, methodically. And then the second a ball goes back over the top, we're under pressure and we're the ones who are struggling, despite the fact that we're playing the better soccer, you know. I don't know. It boggles the mind.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know enough tactically to know if that just kind of comes with the territory of, you know, the style of football that Mark wants to play. I don't know if that's how it is for most teams that play like that. What do you think?
I mean, it is something that I've seen before. I mean, being a Liverpool fan, that was like the Brendan Rodgers era, where anytime, you know, we'd have, you know, Liverpool would have, you know, 65-70% of the ball and lose, you know, to West Ham 3-0 or whatever, because they just played on the counter, and every time they got forward, even though it was only, you know, like in this situation, San Antonio, 2 shots in the first half, both of them goals. Mm-hmm. So that's right. I guess 3 shots, 1 saved, two for goals. So they're not generating anything, but every time that they attack, it feels more dangerous almost, because it's like so rare,
mm-hmm.
but they just make so much out of it. Whereas we're attacking the whole game, and time after time after time, we have nothing to show for it.
Yeah. Thinking about it, I feel like because we, you know, play so slow, and, you know, we bring the whole team, you know, up to the other team's half of the pitch, we, like you said, we get caught off guard. So to me, the solution seems to be that, you know, we just have to get a shot off every time. We can't get dispossessed. To me, that seems like what the solution is. I don't know.
No, I think you're completely right in bringing up kind of the Brendan Rodgers era of Liverpool and just getting carved apart, like, on those counters. The way that we play requires an incredible amount of concentration.
Yeah.
And with each pass that gets completed, you know, it's more likely someone's going to take a bad touch at one point, right. or just switch off for a millisecond. And that's enough.
Yeah.
That's enough to get carved apart on a counterattack. Yeah. And that's what happened here, apparently.
Right.
And that's what happens to us in the past. I mean, or in the past, excuse me. So, yeah, I mean, it's a style that Mark Lowry is very much wedded to. So I don't think we can even sit here and suggest, like, let's lump it, you know, when we don't have the personnel for that anyway.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think we need to think less about the perfect opportunity and take more good ones.
Right.
Take more good shots. Yeah. Make the keeper work. I mean, all these cliches that we've talked about on this podcast, you know, many times before.
Stop waiting for a 10 and take a 7.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they can't always be 10s.
Yeah. There was, it seemed that there was relief just a few minutes later. As we get into the second big controversy of the evening, not the last, there's still one to go. But so just a few minutes later, San Antonio actually win the ball back on the edge of their area, and Richie Ryan makes a crunching tackle, 100% fair. The San Antonio guy in the press box was not pleased with it. I was loving it because he won the ball fair and square. It was a great tackle. Wins the ball back. It lands at the feet of Sebastian Contreras, makes a nice move inside of a couple players, takes a shot, maybe a cross, whatever he was like. It seemed like a shot,
mm-hmm.
Curling in towards the post, and it seemingly nestles in the back of the net for Locomotive's equalizer. The goal is given. A couple of minutes seem to pass where Locomotive's headed back for the kickoff. San Antonio's surrounding the referee. Referee goes and has a conference with his linesman, and eventually, after much deliberation, gives an offside decision. The play itself is obviously confusing because there's a lot of facets to the offside rule, and, you know, where Derek Gebhardt is standing in an offside position, but kind of out of the play. He's not really affecting things. Omar is seemingly level with the last defender, but it seemed like the decision is that Omar is a fraction off and makes enough of, I'm not sure if he had the contact on the ball or and redirects it, or if him attempting to play it was enough, but they called, I believe, Omar offside and denied him that goal. From your guys' perspective, I mean, ultimately, the reaction to the situation was crazy because it was so delayed, but what was your takeaway, I guess, from that? Was it a good goal, or was it maybe not a good goal, but the way the referee approached the situation made the whole decision kind of strange?
I think so. Like you said, there's a lot of facets and aspects to the rule, but so my analysis of it is, number one, I don't think Omar was offsides. I don't think he was in an offside position. To me, it didn't even look like he was particularly close from the angle that I was looking.
Yeah.
The only explanation that I would be okay with, like if they told me this is why, is that the position that the keeper was in, it looked like Derek was, you know, in his eye line.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the rule is, you know, if they say, well, because of where Derek was at, you know, he affected the keeper's ability to make a play on the ball.
Right.
Then I'll take that. But it's one of those things where I don't know if that's why it is. And if it wasn't for that, then I think it's unacceptable.
Right. And I mean, Mika, the delayed nature of the decision, it kind of allows for a lot to be called into question about it.
Yeah, I have no clue why it took so long. It's not like this league has VAR.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what was going on there. And even, you know, unfortunately I wasn't able to attend the game in person, but I was watching it, you know, live on TV, and Duke and Mike weren't even sure what was going on. In fact, I agree. I don't think it was offside. I don't think Omar was offside. And in fact, the first explanation that Duke and Michael proffered is maybe Omar had interfered with the goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
That would have seemed more reasonable given the position that he was in.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they do play the replay and it doesn't look like he touches the ball I don't know. I would like to know what, I mean, I think I've asked before on this pod, like, do the refs keep notes? Like, I would love to see what his notes said about that and why it took so long. Because it's just inexplicable.
Yeah, and like you said, I think it happened, it was a matter of how the decision was delivered. Because it almost, like, it seemed like in the referee's mind, it had to be, like, they were looking for a reason to disallow the goal instead of a reason to allow it.
Right.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And if you were influenced by, you know, the San Antonio fans surrounding you, then that's just poor as well. I mean.
It was interesting because, you know, when it's not as if the referee sprinted straight over to the linesman. Like, there was no confusion. It was a good goal. Everyone was, you know, Locomotive players are celebrating. San Antonio players were, you know, frustrated because they just conceded. You know, the half-hearted hands held in the air for offside. You know, that's every goal ever scored.
That's just a reflex.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything.
Every goal ever scored that was even close to offside has had the, you know, the arm up in the air about it. But my thought is, you know, if he had sprinted, you know, it was immediate, like, I'm not 100% about this. I'm going to go talk to the linesman and see what he saw, because before I give it, I've seen it, you know, seen that done. But the way that the whole sequence transpired, it actually, a replay of the goal took place with on the video board of the stadium because it was a goal. Which Duke Keith actually floated that out on Twitter, you know, because they won't show contentious refereeing decisions on the video board just in case the referee is you know, trying to sneak a peek,
right,
and let it influence his decision. But in this case, they were replaying what was seemingly a good goal, and more than one source has explicitly accused the referee of watching the replay and then deciding not to give the goal. So either way, pretty bad look for referees, because the flag itself never goes up, which to me is, you know, if the linesman hasn't given it, then what's the referee seen to decide not to give it? Because he's in no position to make a decision about offsides.
Yeah, exactly. I think now, as I'm thinking about it more and more, this doesn't seem like good officiating form. But what may have happened, I think, is that it might come down to kind of like what I was saying, it might come down to like a rules interpretation kind of issue, where the linesman did see something, didn't raise his flag, you know, but then afterwards, you know, I don't know if they communicate by headset or whatever, like they do in some of the other leagues. I don't know if they're that.
I think the center referee and the fourth official are able to talk on the headset, but I don't think he's able to talk to the linesman.
Okay. So maybe there was some sort of I'm thinking there might have been some sort of communication between the linesman and the head referee saying, hey, come over here, I saw this, right. What does it mean? And so maybe that's what happened too. I don't know.
But in a league without VAR, that shouldn't even be reviewable.
You make a decision you stick with it. You're right. But yeah. I'm just thinking maybe that.
Yeah, maybe that is what happened, which is farcical if that's what happened.
It was interesting because a couple of people replied to the tweet in which we talked about the accusations of the referee watching the replay on the video board, and there seem to be a few USL teams out there that have had similar incidents. Nashville SCA's Speedway Soccer podcast actually replied to us and said this happened to us when they played Ottawa Fury. So it seems to be something that could easily have happened in a USL game. But Lokomotiv do actually, you know, they don't get too down on themselves. They have a good period of play, earn themselves a corner and then get the equalizer. Little bit of pinball in the box, but it falls to the left foot of Andrew Fox, who dispatches the volley with some authority.
Yeah. It's a rocket.
Yeah, is it a half volley because it bounced? I've been watching football for years and I still don't know.
So I just learned this, and it's only because Dejan Lovren did one this season against all odds for Liverpool. So a full volley is any time that the ball has bounced or, you know, is bouncing and is falling and you strike it.
Right.
A half volley is when you hit it while it's still rising from a bounce, okay. which is obviously an incredibly difficult technique to actually score from.
Right.
Cause you know,
so this was a,
volley. This is a full volley. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I was right the first time. All right.
So yeah, full volley from Andrew Fox. Obviously the goal form out was of
amazing. Like he looked like the Bundesliga logo. Yeah.
It's funny. I was just gonna say he looked like he could be on a soccer, like on a logo, but I didn't know.
Yeah, that yeah. It's a great finish, and obviously, you know, coming from a defender, one of the you know more technical goals that we've seen scored this year, kind of rained on by the result, a little bit. Out of context, though, great goal.
Yeah.
But this gets us into such a, and it sucks that we're going to talk about a goal so little, due to what comes after. Foxy, if you're hearing this, we're not taking away from the strike. I tried to tell you that, but obviously, in context of the match, there's other stuff to talk about because. The time from when we score to when San Antonio scored the second was more of the same in terms of control, playing some good stuff, actually created a few decent chances, and then we concede. Ball over the top finds Lopez again, Our center backs kind of caught out for this one. Drew Becky kind of caught flat-footed under the ball, and Lopez able to slot it past Ketterer pretty easily one-on-one. So, I mean, is this the moment in the match that you point to and say that's where that's the type of situation where, you know, Achiro changes that situation? Like, if Chiro's back there, that sort of thing doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think so. They're both, you know, prone to some mistakes every now and then. But this, I think Chiro's mistakes come from what I can remember, they're all from passes that I'm not quite happy about when they happen. But I think mentally, you know, as far as, you know, spatial awareness and, you know, knowing what's going on around him, those are not the kind of mistakes that he makes. So this particular goal, I think, would have been prevented from, you know, having him there instead.
Mika, we've talked a lot about the way the center backs play. In my mind, when this goal happens, it's basically brought on by the fact that you have two center backs that are both wanting to be more aggressive, more proactive, kind of get ahead of the play, cut things out in midfield if they can, and you don't have that one who's willing to marshal that and really kind of control when that's happening. Is that just a case of we had two kind of more hot-headed center backs and we needed that kind of calm one back there to handle those type of situations?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think anytime you're playing in a four, two center backs, two traditional center backs, there's got to be the stay at home and the one who rushes out. I mean, this was the problem Arsenal had for a while, trying to get a partner that fit with Koscielny.
Right.
Because he always wants to rush out.
Yeah.
I mean, now that he's lost his step, he's kind of, you know, changed his game a little bit, but
yeah,
that's exactly what I thought about, is like there are teams at the highest level who are still trying to figure out that
right,
pairing.
Right.
And Fox and Becky are both wanting to be on the ball, wanting to take it out of defense, you know, are more mobile guys,
right,
mobile, tall lead, can play fullback. I mean, yeah. I think I had said in our chat, I mean, they defend like fullbacks at times. Becky's positioning on that goal is horrendous. Yeah. I mean, I just felt like it was in slow-mo, him watching the ball just like rainbow over his head.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that might not have happened to Chiro, just because Chiro knows he's not fast enough to get back for something like that. So he'd probably already be in a better position anyway.
Yeah. And it is, yeah, the pairing itself, it's almost like the way that we've seen Becky play since he's come in the team, the games that I think about where he came in and really was, you know, impactful is when he's got Chiro next to him.
Exactly.
So when you got Becky and Fox both back there, both can definitely, you know, play center back and they can do a great job most of the time, but paired, it's not the pairing that we'll want here the rest of the season, but it's one that we're forced into, you know, now with injury.
Right.
So now does it just become trying to coach that out of at least one of them, where you're almost trying to rein them in against like kind of their instincts?
Maybe. I mean, I think if we had to pick one of the two who's going to be the one that stays at home, I'd probably go with Fox, just because he's very tall. Obviously, he's got a good header on him. Decent passer.
Right.
He tried to play it out of defense a lot and go forward with the ball with varying success against San Antonio. But if there's anyone between the two of them that could maybe play that role, it might be him. But, yeah, I just feel like the both of them see that space and they want to get up there and do something. And it's just like, cool, but we need someone at home though,
right?
So like,
and especially against a guy like Lopez who's just right, gonna sit on that back shoulder and wait for that type of moment.
Right. Yeah. Right. And he was calling for those kinds of balls all night long, just really just terrorizing them.
I mean, Christian, what type of blow is it just to give up that goal right before halftime?
That's always the worst. I think that that is worst case scenario in any game. Even if that, you know, even if in it fits in a case where we're still up a goal, you know, if we're up 2-0, if someone scores on you in stoppage time, that can bring you down. And that happens in any sport. So I think that does not bode well, you know, when you look into it, especially like this particular goal where it was just poor form. It wasn't luck. It wasn't, you know, a one in a million chance. It was just bad. So what do you do? Like, it's one of those things where you just go into the locker room as a player. I assume, you know, you're going to the locker room just knowing that you're probably going to get ripped one. And I just feel like even the most professional player, you know, it's not a nice thing to go through.
It certainly set things back a little bit going into that halftime break, losing because, you know, it felt so undeserved. But we did, you know, we get to halftime. The game's certainly not over. There were a lot of promising things going off. We failed to mention Nick Ross goes off about 20 minutes in to this one with a laceration on his knee that actually required stitches. Edson Partida came on for him. Obviously, different type of player, you know, going from Nick to Edson. And there were some impacts on that left flank as a result. I know, Mika, you were talking about having James and Edson on the same side.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that James likes to get forward. Sometimes he likes to even find himself in midfield and get on the ball and be very influential. But that requires a partner on that left side to fill that space, that gap that he leaves behind, especially because we play a four. And the Partida just wasn't doing that because he's not that kind of player.
Right.
He doesn't have the same kind of work rate as Nick or, you know, Chapa if he had been on that side. So it was just a little problematic for me seeing Kiffy do his normal thing and it looking so bad just because there wasn't someone there to plug the gap. So
we get into the halftime, we get out of the halftime break. 4 minutes are played after halftime that look pretty good from Locomotive. And then the game stops. Lightning strike was too close for comfort. Little thing I found out after the game was the way that's supposed to happen is the grounds crew is actually tracking, like, with the El Paso Weather Service, whatever, you know, National Weather Service thing. They're tracking lightning strikes and their proximity to the stadium because, you know, the grounds crew is literally only worried about whether it's going to rain too much on the precious dirt. of the baseball stadium, or is lightning too close, you know, for player and fan safety. The lightning was all happening outside of the radius, but one lightning strike, I guess, just caught the referee's eye, and the referee sent the teams to the locker rooms. The referee made that decision unilaterally. It was not anyone at the club. It was not anyone on the grounds crew. It was not anyone, like, at USL, whatever. The referee... he went from, you know, amateur linesman to amateur meteorologist and sent the teams to the locker room.
So now my question is, did he see the lightning strike on the video board? Or did he see it with his own two eyes? Because I just don't trust this guy anymore. Thank God.
So he sends the teams to the locker rooms, 50-minute delay. The confusion reigned for everybody. That's a crazy thing. It did not rain one drop in the stadium.
Oh, it did.
Oh, did it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It did.
He was in the box. He was being all posh.
Weird flex, but okay.
Yeah, no, the... okay, Well, it didn't rain much.
Yeah, no. But it was by, I wouldn't even call it a drizzle.
Right.
It was sporadic sprinkling.
For as crazy as the rest, El Paso itself, the whole city was being rained on, minus Southwest University
Park. Pouring on the west side.
Like, over here, I know it was wild. My wife's texting me, like, is it okay over there? Like, because it was Armageddon over here. Like, but, so, 50-minute delay. We come out of the delay, and the discussion going on is like, okay, you know, sometimes this could be good. Like, this could, maybe the team gets kind of mentally back in it, just has a little bit to kind of take a step back from the emotions of what was going on. And like 5 minutes after the weather delay ends, we concede a third.
Yeah, I mean, we've conceded at like all the worst times in this game. I mean, within the first 10 minutes, an extra time at the end of the first half, and right after a fortuitous, you would think, delay. Right. So it's just like, screw us, basically.
Like, I mean, it's another chance that's created from some poor defensive work this time. I mean, Brian Rebillon, midseason USL Defender of the Year, and rightly so, but poor coming out of that weather break, and he gets completely done by Billy Forbes going down that, you know, San Antonio's left.
Yeah, it's the tables have turned, right? Like, that was a straight up Omar move that he put on.
So that's what that feels like
on our back. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was a good goal. You know, Forbes got off a really good cross, and you know, found someone in the box who finished. So props to them, and shame on us.
Bradford Jameson IV. Is there a Is there a like odder name for a decently saucy striker at USL level?
Seems yeah, like really. Be someone's like lawyer, esquire,
barrister.
Yeah, it's like a Downton Abbey character.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
I Bradford Jameson IV.
Oh my goodness. What's his nationality?
He's American.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. Okay, because I was going to say, maybe if he's like Jamaican, sometimes they have like English.
He could be of Jamaican ancestry though. So okay. I mean, it is possible that he's Caribbean. He is American, like citizenship and all that.
Got it. Yeah, I mean the entire sequence is a nightmare for Rebillon, because it starts with him giving the ball away for seemingly no reason whatsoever. And then, I mean, Lopez, again, being the terror that he was, he gains possession, middle of the field, had a couple really nice moves around a few people. And then, of course, like we just said, Billy Forbes just, like, dropping the shoulder on Rebillon, and that's it. It's a tap-in for Bradford Jameson IV.
Yeah.
So, just conceding at all the worst times. Not that there's ever a great time to concede a goal, but it's just, like, that's what I was thinking when we had the delay. It's like, okay, let's regroup. Let's talk. Let's rest a little bit. I mean, it was getting a little chippy out there. There was a lot of fouls. And so, yeah, just absolutely not the way that we wanted it to go.
From there, there are obviously, you know, San Antonio has by then, you know, and we gave them no reason not to, but they sat back. They waited to hit us on the counter the rest of the game, but they defended in numbers. They defended deep. And despite all that, Locomotive still did create like a decent amount of chances in the box. They end up having 11 shots from inside the box in this game. A significant number of them are blocked by San Antonio players, which credit to them. They're putting their body on the line, getting in the way of stuff. But, I mean, there's at least, you know, 6 or 7 shots from inside the box in this game. Only one finds the back of the net. Is it just, I mean, we talked about it at the beginning, like we're going through one of these tough moments. Is it just the fact that we're going through, you know, you see some of the best players in the world go through droughts? Is it just the fact that we're kind of lacking confidence as a team a little bit in the goal scoring department? We're a little gassed. There's injuries. Are we just going through a tough moment and we're still gonna kind of see the other side, or is that conversion rate like that 12% or whatever? It's probably lower now. It's probably like 10 by now.
Right.
Is that conversion rate just how good at finishing we are? Like, are we just settled in? Like, well, we're only going to score like 12% of our chances.
I'm inclined to say so. I mean, some players are excellent players that just don't have that killer instinct like we had talked about before we started recording. And I'm not saying that to put any of the players down. It's just finishing is a skill in and of itself. And,
yeah.
and having that instinct and, you know, knowing what runs to make or how much power to put on a header or even estimating how much pace is on a cross and how much you need to, do you need to flick it on? Do you need to really power header it? I mean,
right.
we saw that with Gebhardt a few times.
Yeah.
He had a couple really good headed chances that are just wide. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say though, in this game, I think we need to give a little bit of credit to the keeper, to Cardone.
Yeah.
He made a couple really good stops and seemed to command his box pretty well, especially on some of the crosses that, or some of the, corner opportunities that we had. But yeah, I think all in all, I mean, this is how we looked before we signed Jerome. I mean,
yeah.
granted, small sample size, but yeah, I think a lot of these players are at their capacity in terms of finishing. We have a lot of creativity. Just, we need someone on the tip of the spear. So
yeah, the conversion rate, that is us. I don't think that's going to change for the rest of the season. So, and that's fine. But what that says to me is we're a defensive team. And over the past 5 weeks, we have not been a defensive team. Call it injuries, call it, you know, legs, whatever you want to. It doesn't matter. What matters is that it's not there. And it needs to be, you know, on the window for how long this kind of drought can go on is closing quickly. We're coming up on, I think, you know, the last third of the season. And the conference is a tight race. And 5 weeks ago, you know, we're sitting at the top of the table. And I can't remember if we said this when we were on the air, so I'm sorry if I'm being redundant. But, you know, a bad result on Saturday could knock us, you know, down 3-4 spots, and then what, you know? Then another bad result, and you know, we're back at, I don't know, 12th, where I think that's the lowest that we've ever been at this season. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, two more bad weeks, and that's where we are again. We're starting from square one.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because we've talked in the past, and we've kind of just assumed, you know, looking across the league, that we're going to start converting more chances just by the law of averages. But I mean, we are kind of getting to, you know, now that we're past halfway, we're kind of at a point where it's like, well, nope, this is about
average,
where we're
yeah.
at. So the question now is with Sebastian Velasquez joining the squad, is that enough to get to a level in terms of converting chances, you know, assuming Jerome is back healthy here shortly? Between the two of them, is that enough to rise to a level of goal scoring where we can, you know, expect to win, you know, the majority of our games in the run-in?
Mm-hmm. I think that it can be. I think that it's going to come down to what Mark can bring out of him, because he can score goals from, you know, what I've seen of him. But as a midfielder, I think the other thing that will be asked of him is, can you make everyone else better? You know, with Jerome, I really think that all that's being asked of him is to put the ball in it. I think that that's the nature of being a striker, is that's your only job. But when you play in the midfield, I think what's going to happen for him is Mark's going to say, okay, we need you to score, but we also need you to create and kind of be a spark. That's what he's got to be at this point. He's got to be the firecracker that is going to kind of wake everyone up, because it doesn't look like it's going to happen. the players that are on the field right now, it doesn't look like it's happening on their own.
Right. And with that being said, I think that's something that we traded away when we traded Calvin Rosén, is that spark, that chaos factor, if you will. because that's a thing. I mean, and hopefully that's something that Sebastian Velasquez can bring. But I don't know. I'm just interested to see where he plays and what space he occupies, because we have a whole lot of creative players. And in reading Mark's quote about him, he says he's a creative guy. And I'm like, well, we have tons of those.
Yeah.
So, and on another note, is goal scoring from a midfielder is an absolute treat. That's why players like Frank Lampard and the like, Aaron Ramsey,
right?
Those are really special players, a very specific mold that it's really, I don't even know. I just don't know how common that is at this level.
Right.
But he did score a lot when last time he played in at this level. So hopefully he can replicate that for him.
Yeah, and I mean, it is one of the things that Mark said last night in the press conference was that what stood out to him about Sebastian versus everyone who's on the team is just his decision making and his kind of thought process when he gets near, you know, the final third or into the opponent's area. He brings a little bit of, like you said with Calvin, that chaos factor where he's not always going to take, because we tend to be extremely predictable, I think, mm-hmm. in the way that we try to score. We do a lot of the same pattern. We talked about it, I think, last week or maybe the week before, just we do the same patterns kind of over and over again. And if there's a guy who can turn those patterns kind of on their head or do something that people aren't expecting, that's something that we definitely need. Like it's bringing that type of guy in, I think, is a very shrewd move, in that if he's unconventional, that's perfect. You know, like if he's a guy who doesn't exactly follow the mold, then that's kind of what we're looking for going forward. 'Cause we just need somebody who's going to kind of, I mean, when you need it, pull the rabbit out of the hat, so to speak, and score even when it doesn't look like we should. You know, that's we have plenty of moments where we look like we should be scoring and should be dominating the game, not just, you know, in the stats, but on the scoreline as well. And maybe it's a guy, who can, you know, score from moments where we don't look like the better team, who can make the difference. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. I think he will play Saturday, because now he's outside the window of his transfer clearance. So, and based on our team health, I think Sebastian will definitely be in the starting 11. But at the end of this one, it was 3-1 to San Antonio, a very, very, just kind of humbling, rough loss, which, you know, until Fresno a couple of weeks ago, we hadn't really had many results like this since, you know, the very beginning of the season. And now to have two in quick succession, it's starting to feel slightly more troubling than it did early on. But we've seen what the team is capable of in terms of, you know, when they are firing, they can be extremely good. But yeah, Christian, I mean, when you're set up the way we're set up and you concede three at home, you're probably not going to win a whole lot of games. So to lighten things ever so slightly, I'm not going to add, well, I will say we kind of talked pre-recording about the fact that there's really only one choice for man of the match out of this one from Lokomotiv. And it's one of the less likely guys. We talked about him last week, Christian, but Chapa comes out of this one of the few players who can really hold his head high and say that he put in a solid shift.
Yeah. And if we're, you know, scraping for positives here, it's that, you know, if it's, that's 2 weeks now where he's been the best player on the field, then even though as a team we have not been getting good results, as an individual, for him, that's great. You know, for him to be getting that, because it's not, I don't think that it's, you know, we're saying his name just because he was the best of the worst. I think he had a genuinely good game this week and last week. And so for him to be putting in that quality time, just, it's good for him. It's good for his confidence. And I think that it will allow allow Mark to keep giving him those opportunities. And I think that with a player who just appears to be very determined and does not waste those opportunities, I think that that's another positive for the team in the future. And that is just going to keep, he's going to keep getting better because he takes advantage of, you know, the time that he's given.
I mean, with him contributing in this one primarily in the attacking phases of play rather than what we've seen, you know, a lot more focused on ball control and just kind of doing a job in midfield, cycling possession, it's kind of interesting to see this progression from Chapa, where he is showing us, you know, kind of the stuff that we talked about at the beginning of the season we weren't sure he had. Some pretty good vision and a decent range of passing as well.
You know what he reminds me of, Phil? Maybe you can disagree with me, but he's like our James Milner.
Oh, for sure.
You know, just like anywhere he is on the pitch, he'll do something for you.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, his head never drops. I mean, he's just always putting in a shift. And I think that in a game like this where it's already lost and he's still doing something, that's really all you can hope for.
Right.
But yeah, no, he genuinely had a good game. It wasn't just best of the worst, as Christian said, but he reminds me a lot of James Milner and just the way that he goes about, you know, his business on the pitch.
So the next thing we need is our induction to the Seriously Loco Shithouse 11. Things are getting rounded out. We've got all players of all walks from all across the Western Conference of the USL. But San Antonio, we didn't record the last time we played them due to me being on the road. So this time around, who for you guys earned that proud badge of honor of being in the Seriously Loco Shithouse 11?
Oh, God. I couldn't keep track. So because we're recording so soon, I didn't get a chance to watch the game again, and I'm not familiar with all the players just from seeing them, you know, at the game. But I would basically have to say every San Antonio player that spent like 5 minutes on the ground in the last 5 minutes of the game. It was so frustrating. So
every single member of their roster.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah, they were just falling all over the place, and I just did not understand. But also, if I had to come up with a serious submission, since we didn't get a chance to, I think we have to go back to the first leg and say Barmby.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Barmby. So for those, since we're recording this, obviously well after the fact, Barmby was the El Paso Locomotive's hero of the last match in San Antonio because he stepped up and took the penalty, which Logan saved, and then just a little bit later in the second half was sent off for a second yellow card for simulation. So in terms of shithousery, that is way, way up there. But he was caught, you know, in being sent off for diving. So I don't know if that takes away from his shithouseness in that he was actually caught, or if it adds to it because he dove poorly enough to be caught.
Yeah, I guess it could go either way. And then just like missing the penalty is the icing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of, if we're going to have to pick from this week, I kind of want to go unconventional. I've been thinking, how are we going to get a keeper into this Shithouse 11? And I would honestly put San Antonio's front office at keeper for blocking and parrying Sebastian Velasquez's debut. Because that was shithousery. Like, I didn't even know that was possible.
Well, maybe we still hold out for a keeper, but someone still has to run this team. So if we have to just choose a front office.
San Antonio's
Yeah. And after all this, a podcast with a Spurs fan on it is nominating Spurs Sports and Entertainment for the
San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not Tottenham. Not Tottenham.
They should have just stuck to basketball, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. So, I mean, I was going to potentially nominate, you know, if this team has to play any games in the future and needs an official to referee, then this guy is a strong candidate. But no, I'd say Barnby and then the San Antonio front office has probably weaseled their way in. So, now we can thankfully mostly leave this game in the past. But we are going to move on to our listener questions, which, only a few this week. I don't think it was too heavy of a,
workload. Got questions on like two different tweets. No.
We may have, and then I got one on Facebook as well. I think you got some on Instagram.
Oh,
so
no.
we're spreading the
growing the brand.
Here. Yeah,
growing the brand.
Just more and more clout, you know. Lou, I subconsciously thought about this, but so Lou Tep Miner, who runs the runs Eighth Notch ever so well. He said,
depending on who you ask, apparently, from what I see on Twitter,
there is some internal strife, not legitimate, just, yeah. All in good fun. But yeah, Fernie has constantly trying to undermine him, on the internet. But Lou just said, can we put the entire San Antonio team and the ref in the shithouse?
There we go.
So, I mean, we can do anything, but yeah, I think we'll settle for the front office
and the referee.
The ref and then Jack Barnby. Fernie came through. He was asking, has the apocalypse happened at El Paso Locomotive, and is there any saving us? So, I mean, we spent a decent time discussing it, but, I mean, I think we all believe they can turn it around. We're just in a moment where it's kind of teetering. Like, the season is kind of teetering right now.
I think, yeah, I mean, of course we can turn it around, but one thing that I've noticed just looking around the league at other results is that a lot of teams in this league are very streaky.
Yeah.
I mean, take Real Monarchs, who we'll be facing. They've had 5-game losing streaks, 5-game winning streaks, and, I mean, New Mexico United, same thing. There's a lot of teams around us who have gone through this just at different points in the season. Yeah, I think we can turn it around. And I mean, is there any saving us? What are we being saved from? We're not getting relegated.
True.
So, we'll be all right.
True. That's a conversation for just a little later in terms of relegation within the USL. I don't know. No apocalypse. Just a tough period of the season. Which, I mean, I think every team probably in world football goes through that one stretch of the season where you're just feeling a little like short on players, a little, you know, you've got injuries, you've got guys who you're playing, you know, 3 games a week and not everybody's available all the time. It's just that tough mid season kind of area where, not everybody's fit, and hopefully we can get some luck with, injuries going forward. 'Cause I think we've paid quite a bit of karma in terms of injuries. But Charles Fenwick, always good to have him in the listener question segment, just said, during the recent match at Fresno, the announcers made comments to the effect of, yeah, El Paso's roster is small like Fresno's was last season. Now that Fresno has grown its roster, it can really succeed. Is El Paso's roster small compared to other independent teams, and does that matter? I mean, I'm not sure roster size-wise. I know it's smaller than some teams like San Antonio, who have been around the league for a while. Mm. But do you guys think that this is just... I mean, to me, the depth, you know, it is starting... Like, it's showing in terms of... the amount of players that we're able to carry on the roster, it just doesn't feel like it's quite enough. Like, we fielded 5 subs last night.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it's clearly not enough. But then again, you see decisions being made like Daniel Devaro going on loan again.
Right.
So it's like, well, then really how desperate are we for bodies?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's strange. Yeah. Because I look at the team and I go, yeah, this is a small roster. What the hell?
Right.
We should never have 4 outfield players and a reserve goalkeeper on the bench. That's insane.
Yeah.
But then you see transactions like that and you're like, well, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, unless there's something going on with that we don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's that I think that, you know, we have some depth, but, like, you can plan for injury, but only so much. And I think that we're just in a really bad space because of the amount, and I don't think that there's really anything that we can do about it at this point, you know, and no one can predict that, you know, 4 of your typical starting 11 are going to be out in any particular game, so there's only so much you can do, I think.
We had quite a few people on, like Mika said, on a separate tweet today talking about how, you know, uneventful the game was. Obviously, listening to this, you guys can tell that nothing really happened. No controversy whatsoever. we had Mark Smith, come through. He said, how about a show just full of hot takes? I think we may have hit that already. We've had some a couple of little spicy ones, not too bad. He said, I'll admit I had a lot immediately following the match. I've cooled down a bit now. I think we're all kind of on the same page, Mark. There's a couple of things that still that'll still get our ire up, but most of the time, or by now, we're doing a little bit better. He went on to ask basically, a perception out there, it seems, is that, and I mean, to, you know, someone just watching the matches, this could certainly be the perception, is basically, you know, why are we resting our best players? Because there's not big announcements. There's not, hey, this is our injury list, you know, the injury report, you know, so the fantasy users can get the guys out of their team and everything like that. There's nothing like that going on. So to the casual fan, like, it just appears like we're not playing players for games. So do you think, maybe the question is, do you think the team needs to be a little more upfront about its injury situations? Or is it better that we play those kind of mind games and just don't really reveal that kind of stuff until we're announcing our lineup?
I mean, from a fan perspective, yeah, I'd like to know what's going on with the team and, you know, why these people aren't here sometimes for, you know, extended periods of time. I don't think if it, sorry, I'm getting all tongue tied here. I think that from what I understand, it's like that in most leagues where there's not a whole lot of transparency, at least immediately with injuries like there is in other sports. So, it almost seems like it's more of a customary thing. So I don't even know that it has to do with, you know, that they're trying to, you know, play these mind games or, you know, this factors into their game plan or anything. It just seems like it's not the thing that these football clubs do.
Yeah. I mean, that is more or less like, it's just not standard practice to, like, air everything that's going on. But if there are serious injuries or something happens during the week, normally you've got that kind of pre-match press conference like a day prior where he's like, hey, he's not going to be available or something like that.
Right. And that's just something that we just logistically don't have the opportunity to do in the USL Championship. But I don't know. I think I saw his question. He said, you know, it seems like we're resting players and thinking of future matches. But I think it really is just injuries. I mean, in the one thing that you got to see if you were watching the game on TV during the break for the weather was just graphic upon graphic upon graphic of all the injured players.
Yeah.
It was just, like, depressing.
It's like the in memoriam and Oscars or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just really unlucky right now. Really unlucky right now with injuries in training, injuries on the pitch, and, to, you know, starters.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
At High Thumper came through as well. He just said it's after a short conversation about Jerome Kiesvetter being injured. He said it's unfortunate how lackluster our offense is when he isn't in the lineup. Other guys have to step it up. Well said.
Right.
Basically. That's right. I mean, exactly. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to ask all of you to bear with us Jesus through this Christ. Next part, because I mean, we are people. Like we are going to do the interactions the way we say. I'm not going to censor anyone on here. And so even though Chris Walker week after week is just throwing nonsense into our mentions so that he can be the villain of the Seriously Loco podcast, I have to stick by what we say we'll do, and I'm going to read this. I can't promise that it's going to make sense to everybody. I can't promise that it's going to be coherent, but we're going to give, I'm going to give it,
anyone.
I'm going to give it my best shot. And I mean, Chris, like, just know that the more of these that occur, the worse my backlash on Seek and Strike is going to get. So, like, you're going to have to deal with some real obnoxious shit coming through in the next few weeks. But here we go. He said, it seems Locomotive have switched to keyless entry. Ha. In parentheses. Sorry, refocusing. Do you think Omar has a sag load of goals under his bed? It appears Sebastian was off in the clock tower eating Vlasic or Vlasic pickles. That'll stick. Due to SAFC sandbagging on his papers while Lopez bagged a brace. I do appreciate the sand reference to San Antonio, though. So he kind of got, it's kind of a double whammy there. Thoughts on being sandbagged? I think we talked that part already. Defensively, you're one of Makinde.
Yeah, that one doesn't work.
But things won't be easy for Derek on July 31. It's going to geb hard from here on out. Expect nothing less. But hey, it's Kiffy or tea. No, that was a stretch also. So then he found a reason to at Eighth Notch as well, because he does enjoy that. So being a member of Eighth Notch, how does it feel to really be in a baby New Mexico / the curse scenario, i.e. flying fans to games, buses, and plastic flags?
What the actual and implied fuck?
I almost want to play, I have it on my phone, but I don't have it like trimmed or anything, so I don't know, but I feel like the appropriate response to that is the scene from Billy Madison when he talks about the puppy who lost his way. In no point in that question did he come close to what could be considered an actual question, and may God have mercy on his soul.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. I will own up to the fact that I called New Mexico out for handing out flags, and then El Paso did hand out flags and then encourage everybody to wave them like at certain times. So I mean,
they were quality flags though.
They are nice flags. They look good.
They're not plastic, that's
but,
for sure.
But I have to just kind of eat my words on that one, because that's, I went after them and then we did the same thing. So, but in terms of us being baby New Mexico, that's just, I'm not hearing that. I won't respond to that. I won't hear it. I won't respond to it, because
I just don't even understand that. Like, we are a Texas team. You know, Texas is as big as like Western Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not.
If you think we're out here copying shit that you guys do, then I mean, that's just asinine. Yeah, I'm not here for it.
Prayers. I don't get that.
A San Antonio fan actually slid in as well. So Harry, who he came out for the match all the way from San Antonio, so good on him making the trip. He got his rewards, obviously, despite the weather delay. He said, yeah, the question has to be asked, where was Velasquez? Well, your boys stopped him from playing. So that's have a word with your own team about that. But no, he just said thoughts on the disallowed goal, which we did give. He said, I think it was a right call, and I don't think the ref used the video, but it did take a long time due to the SAFC players in the ear of both the ref and the linesman. So, I mean, whether you obviously, you know, if I was in your shoes, I wouldn't think that either. So, it's all good, but yeah, the time it took to make the decision was just a little absurd. And he did have a comment as well. He said, I will also say Eighth Notch and El Paso Locomotive FC set the bar very high in terms of like the match day, experience. So before I say El Paso is little New Mexico, let's see what the atmosphere is for New Mexico United and the curse when San Antonio go there this year. So he did, you know, fit the compliment in Eighth Notch in typical fashion, even though it's a weeknight doing their thing, even in a bad result on a weeknight, impressing the traveling fans. So if there's one positive that we can take away from this one, we're still getting the compliments from the rivals for our match day atmosphere at the very least. Christian, I mean, you're helping with our kind of increased content there on Instagram. So, I know we got a couple of messages on there. So see what came through for us.
Yeah. One is a little, a good question, that I think we've kind of addressed, but, Fernie Elias asked, besides injuries, what else do y'all think is causing this winless streak and what changes need to be made? I think, for me, it's like what I said about, you know, we're not an offensive team. So I think that our defense not performing up to standards is what is causing this winless streak. As far as changes that need to be made, I think, number one, we need to get, you know, it'd be good to have Chiro back there. And hopefully, you know, just a little more fire from our offense. Hopefully in the form of Velasquez, like we discussed. But what about you guys?
I mean, stop leaking them untimely goals. Yeah. That's the, like, get out of the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes, something.
Yeah, or, you know, the 5 minutes of extra time in the first half. Oh, my God. Now that I think about it, that extra time was caused by the ref himself.
It was awesome.
Wow. Yeah, no, definite, I think you're spot on.
11 candidate.
This is like exceeding the 11 at this point. Like, this is like the whole, we're doing like a shithouse league.
Oh no, it's a shithouse dynasty is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, a myriad of things. We need to score more goals and concede less. I know that's like the
deep
hashtag analysis. Yep.
Second question was from Simulacra_Jones. And this one was a little bit interesting. I don't know that we'll have an answer, but maybe Phil in his press box coverage has a little more for us. But he writes, is there any truth to the rumor that there is a rift between Jerome and the team? Not that I'm aware of, but I am not privy to that kind of information.
I do not have an inside track on that. The way he's spoken about in terms of like the coaching staff and everything, like it doesn't belie any like underlying problems.
I will say, just having spoken with fans and, you know, just people who watch the team, or even, I even had people at work who have asked me, but no, yeah, I have no clue if there's actually anything going on at the club, but just from speaking with other people, they've said that they've noticed that when Jerome gets fouled or goes down, there's really nobody there, like, on the team, kind of helping up or supporting him. I don't know. I mean, it could be totally anecdotal. I've seen it happen with other players too, but I mean, it does look weird, especially to like the casual fan who doesn't understand, like, he might be doing that, you know, as like a waste time or, you know, gamesmanship, And so, of course, their teammate's not going to go over and be like, oh, my God, are you okay? But I have been asked about that, and I've seen people say, kind of proffer that. But I don't know. I don't know that it's anything. Yeah. I don't want to start rumors as I start a rumor.
Yeah. that's exactly why I don't have a response because I don't.
I finally met Jerome, though. He's a fantastic guy. He's super nice.
Yeah.
Super down to earth. Family guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine that he has the personality. I mean, obviously, he's very competitive, but I don't think that I honestly don't know that he's in. If it has to do with his role on the team, I don't think that he's in a spot where that could be an issue. Because I mean, what more do you want? You're the guy. So yeah. I don't know. I don't think that there would be any truth to that.
I think the only way that it's gone on is because, you know, maybe words have been said in terms of we notice, you know, Jerome at times frustrated with the service or, you know, frustrated with a pass that has or hasn't been made, and maybe on field words that have been exchanged have been you know, taken personally, I guess. Mm-hmm. That could be, to me, that's the only, you know, if he kind of feels that the level of the team is not matching like what he'd expect, then that could potentially cause that type of rift. But again, that's all speculation on our part, and I want to put that disclaimer out there that, like, I have not heard or seen anything that would indicate that there's a rift.
Yeah.
Agreed. Thank you to those two guys for interacting with the Instagram, trying to be a little more active on there. So I'm going to keep putting out content and, you know, like, comment. And I personally love interacting. So if you have things to say, things to share, please do. And you will definitely get my attention.
Go ahead, smash that like
button. Oh my God, don't do it.
What's up, YouTube? No. So the next thing to talk is I want to jump straight to our preview. We've got Real Monarchs in a couple of days this Saturday. Real Monarchs we're playing now, a lot different than the team we played the second game of the season. They have now won 5 straight. Their last loss coming May 29th to Portland Timbers 2. They've essentially gone the exact opposite direction of Locomotive in that they then beat RGV, Colorado Springs, Tulsa, New Mexico United, and Tacoma Defiance. So, granted, slightly easier run of games, I'll say, than what we've played, given, you know, Colorado Springs, Tulsa, kind of on a downward spiral. We know New Mexico is going through kind of a rough patch similar to ours, mm-hmm. Maybe a little longer lasting than ours. And we also didn't get stomped by 5 goals on national TV, so... but... Despite all that, Real Monarchs, they've scored 5 goals in 2 of those games, and the one nothing was just against New Mexico, but they, you know, scored 3 against Tulsa, 5 against RGV, 5 against Tacoma. They're coming into this one on a real high, where we're coming in on a real low. How much do you guys think that just the confidence of it is going to play a factor, despite the fact that we've played some pretty tough teams in this run?
Yeah, it's hard. Because, I mean, I don't believe that they were even, like, on paper supposed to be a bad team anyways. So when you have a team that's supposed to be good and is, on a run of good form, it's scary. And before, you know, we used to kind of be able to say... you know, for a home game, we can at least, you know, I think we've been comfortable saying that we'll squeak out a win, but I'm significantly less comfortable with this one. I think Unless things turn around, it's kind of best case scenario as a draw in this one, just because they are scoring so much and we are conceding so much at this point. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, five wins in a row is nothing to scoff at, even if it is perhaps, you know, weaker opposition. I mean, all you can do is play the teams in front of you. I think they're going to come into the swap feeling themselves. I mean, their conversion rate is nearly 20%, which is mental. But I think that with a less than desirable result for us, they will leapfrog us in the table. So this is a huge match. A huge match for sure.
Yeah, this is one where it feels like it can be either a streak breaker for us in terms of, you know, this can be the start of us kind of digging our way out of this hole, and just getting a win on the board could do us so much good in terms of just the confidence of everybody around the team. And at the same, you know, on the same token, you've got, if Salt Lake do come away with a win, they leapfrog us in the table because they've got two games in hand on us. Getting 3 points brings them above us in points with a game in hand. And that type of, just like we talked about earlier, like if we start making our way down toward out of the playoff places and kind of hovering now in that nebulous, you know, just outside the playoffs sort of area, you're looking at a much different conversation surrounding the season than what we were just 2 weeks ago when we were talking about, oh, you know, like, now that we're up in the playoff, among the playoff teams and hanging with the likes of the Phoenixes, Fresnos, and like these established clubs, now we're staring down the barrel of, you know, if we lose on Saturday, we're tumbling back down. So,
right.
In this one, Mika, you brought up the conversion rate. They've scored a full 14 more goals than we have this season. From two less shots on target. So that just demonstrates how poor our finishing has been this season. But Monarchs, obviously, in these last few games, getting a little bit of help in terms of who they were playing and these teams conceding more goals. So do you think that... Now, for this weekend, we've got what Mark called a 50-50 chance of Chiro and Jerome being ready for this one. Do you think we're in a situation now where even if one of those players isn't necessarily fully fit, Mark may risk them just to make sure as much as possible he gets a result?
I think the pressure is certainly on him to make a decision like that. And I think if there is a player that he may risk, it may be Chiro, just because his game is not one where you ask him to be super mobile. We might just need him to be back there and be that stalwart, you know, in defense. That way Becky can be... someone, you know, bombing forward or trying to bring the ball out or sprinting back. I mean, it's a shame that you even have to consider that, you know, playing someone who's not healthy, because at the end of the day, this is a game and these are people.
Right.
I know some of the hot take merchants might not want to hear that, but it's true. So, yeah, I don't know. I think he's under pressure to do it, whether he does it or not. I don't know. Mark's a bit mercurial in that regard, so.
Yeah, as far as making a prediction on it, it's hard because I don't think we know the nature of the injuries to either of them.
Right.
And I don't know how teams function in this league. Like, if they operate on the basis of, you know, this is our team and we need to protect these players to keep them on our roster for, you know, years and years and years, as right. You would like a young player in the, you know, in the NBA or the NFL or whatever, or if it's kind of a everyone's kind of on a year-by-year deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that comes down to it, too. Obviously, you know, I think that, you know, Mark and the people that make those decisions are human, and they recognize these players are human, but so I don't think they want anyone to, you know, risk themselves, but it factors in into how much it's still a business, and it still comes down to how much do we need you,
right?
So there's so many questions, and I think it's too hard to say.
Well, I mean, with this, we got to get predictions, and it's funny how most weeks we're pretty optimistic, but coming out of this one, the mood is definitely different. So I'm very interested to see, predictions wise, how you guys feel about this one going into this game against Real. So scores and goal scorers for the for Lokomotiv, if any.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I think, what's probably been the most negative prediction of the season, and I'm gonna be really happy with a 0-0 draw in this one.
Yeah, I mean, Real Monarchs have had, I think it's 2 straight clean sheets now. David Ochoa is a very talented goalkeeper. I was going to say 0-0, but I'll say 1-1. I think maybe Gebhard nicked something. He looked like he had that intent towards mm-hmm. the end of this game against San Antonio. And that's a player who, you know, in our private conversations, I've said he looks like he's completely bereft of confidence. I think that that would be really great for him if he can get on the score sheet. So I'm going to try and predict it into reality.
I think I'm going to go about as optimistic as I can, given the current form. And I'm going to say 1-0 to Lokomotiv, because I think Logan will have a very strong game. It's been rare this season that we've seen, you know, 2 games in a row, or even, you know, 2 moments in a row, really, from Logan that have been poor. So I think he'll bounce back from what was, you know, he had one mistake against San Antonio and spilling that first shot. I think he bounces back, gets that 9th clean sheet of the season, along with a defense that for the next couple of days has been drilled pretty, you know, I would probably say rigorously over the last couple of days in how to prevent that sort of thing from happening again. And I think they do have that capability. And then I'm going to say it's written in the stars. San Antonio has actually done us a mild favor, and Sebastian Velasquez, playing against his former team, scores on his debut. And, you know, maybe it'll be late or something, and he'll have to choose between jumping into the net but with eighth notch and not celebrating against his former employers in the traditional style. So that's what I'm saying. I'm going to try to will that one into, just as you have, Mika, I'm going to try to just speak that into the universe, and maybe it'll be real. But no, I do think that the defensive nature of the team can show through once again. It's just a matter of whether they control those couple of moments where they're threatened. And in this game against San Antonio, we absolutely did not at any point, but but maybe in this game against Monarchs, we can put a stop to their run. And I do think that it plays a part in the fact that they've had 5 wins in a row. So, you know, each time it becomes just a little bit harder to maintain that type of consistency. So I'm going to hope for a frustrated Monarch side to limp out of Southwest University Park without any points. So, but I don't know. It's going to be a tough one for sure. I don't know. Like, I'm pretty nervous about it now. I'm not feeling like, normally I feel so confident ahead of like home games and everything, and you just feel good about being able to go to the stadium, but
I know, it's dark times. But we were spoiled for quite a bit.
Yeah.
So We'll see.
It's going to come back. It's going to come back.
Yep. When you walk through a storm, there's a golden sky.
Oh, my God.
No. But anyways, that about does it for us down here. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. If you are listening to this, you're probably listening to it on some podcast platform, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, any of those apps, basically. If you're not already subscribed, please subscribe, because that's the easiest way to get these. It'll just drop straight over the internet into your whatever device you prefer to listen on. And then also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and catch all the Locomotive supporter content you could possibly want. This match was a little too full on the content. A little too much. I'd like it to be a little less intense in terms of the controversy and content they provide. But we are looking forward to Saturday. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday on the regular schedule. So this is a little bonus for you guys. Hope you guys are enjoying it. And until next time, stay loco.